Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
When you golf in Missouri, the courses are so close, you'll spend more time on the fairway than the freeway. Reserve a tee time at the Regal Osage National, designed by the king himself, Arnold Palmer. Take a cart ride on the wild side in the breathtaking surrounds of Payne's Valley, designed by Tiger Woods. And after the back nine, there's still world-class dining and distilleries, shops and spas, museums and more. Find your new golf MO in Missouri. Start planning your golf getaway at visitmo.com.
Welcome back to another holiday edition of Friends from Work, a podcast about all things in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, hosted by me, Robbie Earle, and by my good friend, Kyle Schoenewill. Kyle, first and foremost, happy Thanksgiving week.
Thank you. Thanksgiving is an underrated holiday. I said it first.
Wow.
Is it the best holiday we get? It maybe isn't Christmas, but are you kidding me? Football, food, family, hanging out.
Fall. It's you could so have had good. Four Fs there.
Fall. Oh, I blew it. Four Fs. And I give four Fs about it.
Wow. Wow. Nice. Nice. See, there was a save. I'm with you mostly seasonally. I do love when Thanksgiving falls. It's a nice kind of gateway to the holiday season. And it's finally feeling really nice around here. I also got a chance this weekend to drive up north a little bit, north from here being only Arkansas, and see the fall leaves, which, you know, we've been talking about a lot over the past couple weeks.
You finally got your fall colors. Look at you.
I finally got my fall colors. Wow. Yeah, it was very nice.
Wow. Shout out Arkansas.
Right. Hey, man, Arkansas is talking about list of underrated states, and people are starting to wake up to it. The Northwest Arkansas area especially, but even central Arkansas, like the Little Rock area, it's really pretty. Also, this weekend, what I really wanted to talk about for like 30 seconds, have you seen the movie Ex Machina?
I totally have. That's definitely a movie that could be on Kyle's movie club at some point.
Right.
Why are you asking me that, though?
So I've seen it, but I haven't seen it since it came out. And Candace and I watched it again last night. And holy cow, that movie is so good. I forget how good it is.
Yeah. It was a low budget deal, if I remember right. And it's Oscar Isaac carrying a ton of it. And then who's the girl robot? It's actually someone we know.
Who is it? She plays Tomb Raider in the reboot. But it's also Domhnall Gleeson, who I love. Who the whole time I was watching, I was like, man, I feel like he was really underutilized in the new Star Wars movies. Like, I get the kind of fun thing of making him the evil Empire soldier guy, but I just don't think that that's his strength. Like, I think that it was kind of a novelty thing for the first one, and then they just didn't really know what to do with him.
It's kind of fun that you can have that much tension on such a low-budget film. Like, basically, they never leave that compound. Filming-wise, and yet it's really tense at a lot of times.
Man, it's really, and the score is fantastic, and Alex Garland, who wrote and directed that, also did Annihilation, which is a really kind of crazy, fun movie.
Weird movie. That's a weird movie. Well, fun is not the word for that movie. That is a strange movie. I mean, it's good, but that is weird, and that is not fun.
It is. I had fun with how weird it is, but okay, you're right. Gotcha. It is not fun in tone.
If you look up fun in the dictionary, you don't see Annihilation in there.
I had to bring those up because they both do feel like they could be on the Kyle's Movie Club. And also, they just seem like movies you would like.
And speaking of Oscar Isaac, with Annihilation and with Ex Machina, I watched Dune. Yeah. So another Oscar Isaac. And Disney Plus Day announced that were really close to Moon Knight. Look at this. It's an Oscar Isaac podcast.
That's what I told Candace last night. I was like, man, this is just between this and Dune, I'm more excited than ever to see Moon Knight. Like, I think that's quickly moving to the top of my list just because of how much I've been enjoying Oscar Isaac and the stuff I've been watching lately. And he's been popping up all over the place.
I'm just hoping that it comes out between January and March. I don't want that to be another late summer thing and have it all jam-packed. I kind of want something there. Okay.
Yeah.
But I'm pumped too.
Also, speaking of the holidays, we're getting into that time of the year, Kyle, where people are looking for a little something special, you know, for the people that are special in your life. And
oh, no doubt. That's an epic transition. I love that.
We've really got something special cooked up. And we've talked about this a little bit, but it's official. We've got them available. We have some new Friends from Work merchandise that we are so excited about. We've been kind of working on these designs with our friend Jacoby. Candace has been coordinating a lot of this, making it all as good as it could possibly be. And we finally have the final products. And holy cow, we've got these new t-shirts with a brand new Friends from Work logo that we think looks really, really good. And we've got these new sweatshirts up for pre-order with a different take on the Friends from Work logo, which is an homage to the Amazing Spider-Man logo back from the 60s.
Which basically are now order because I think I have them coming to me this week. So I'm ready.
Oh, man. I actually can't wait to get one of those.
Yeah.
Same. So if you are listening and you're a fan of the show and you haven't got a chance to go online and check out that merch, go to the FFWpodcast.com. You can also see pictures on our social media and all that stuff. These are selling like hotcakes, like we said.
And just a reminder, these new designs are coming down on December 17th. I think we'll be out of them by then, but it's a limited time thing to get you ready for Spider-Man. So get yours before December 17th. You can wear your new hoodie to No Way Home. Not a bad deal.
Not a bad deal.
And Robbie, in this giving season, we have another Cinemark $50 gift card giveaway. So without further ado, congratulations to Jacob Keen. Let's go, Jacob.
Woo! Wow. You snaps. Did it, Jacob. I was rooting for you personally.
This is snaps instead of claps because I'm holding my phone on the other hand. But congrats, Jacob. I love that. We will be DMing you the details. For this week's $50 gift card, you must post a story on social media of you listening to this episode. Tag at Cinemark, tag at the FFW podcast on any social media. And here we go. You have to tell us something you are thankful for this Thanksgiving. That's another thing about Thanksgiving, Robbie, by the way. So underrated is that everyone's just in a spirit of thanks, which is a great place to be in life.
That's true.
So tell us something you're thankful for and post
or
a story.
Someone that you're thankful for.
Or someone. Oh, I love that. Yeah. Look at that little twist. And we'll be giving another $50 gift card away next week. Two more to go. It will help you get your tickets for Spider-Man No Way Home, which is coming up. So let's go.
But today, Kyle, we have even more exciting things to talk about because, as we said in last week's episode, as much Eternals craziness as we've had going on, as much Spider-Man craziness as we've had going on, and as much podcast world craziness as we've had going on, there's a whole new world that I feel like we've barely even tapped into here that's finally opened up to us in the form of Hawkeye, which is a show that I think a lot of folks have been waiting a really, really long time for, and it is officially here.
This is quickly becoming one of my favorite eras of Friends from Work because, let me tell you, these first two episodes of Hawkeye, I really, really enjoyed, but also I'm enjoying this pump up for Spider-Man. So this is officially, I think, starting this weird era where we're going to go Hawkeye talk, and then maybe another episode with Spider-Man talk, like double episode Thursdays potentially at times, which is crazy. Thankfully, they're both in New York, Robbie, so we can keep our mind right
true.
In New York. but I am excited about this era. I need to give one other disclaimer about Hawkeye. We both saw this 2 weeks ago, and we loved it. But to get this episode out as an initial reaction for you, just like with Eternals, we have not seen it again. So it's now been, what, 2 weeks of thinking about it, but not seeing it again. So give us a little bit of grace here if we miss some of the details. From now on, all the other episodes will be in line with you guys, right, and be watching it again, which is great. But just for your Thanksgiving travel, we wanted to make sure you had this out on Wednesday, right? So while you're driving home, visit your family, you got your friends from work going with you. So
don't ever say we don't think about you guys.
Yeah, don't ever say that. You know, don't you dare claim that we don't think about you. But no, this is going to be really fun for me. Let me frame it here, Robbie. Hawkeye episodes 1 and 2. My initial reaction was so much excitement that, as we said before, I texted you immediately while at work. So I'm at work using my ears, so I can't even be concentrating on that. I'm texting you going, oh my gosh, I love this. Christoph Beck, let's go. Oh my gosh, the intro. And then I'm like, Robbie, did you like it or what? Why aren't you talking to me? Emergency, Robbie, you're not answering me. Emergency, did you not like it? Am I crazy? And you're like, no, I know, I loved it. I just was behind and you had technical difficulties, et cetera. But
it's true.
I am excited to talk about this. So here we go. We're back in the Disney Plus mode. Weekly shows. Can't wait. Robbie, why don't you give us an intro to Hawkeye episodes 1 and 2?
All right, Kyle. Hawkeye is created by Jonathan Eagla. It is starring Jeremy Renner, Haley Steinfeld, Vera Farmiga, Fra Fee, Tony Dalton, Zahn McLaren, Brian D'Arcy James, Alakwa Cox, and it has been promised at some point, Florence Pugh. We obviously have not seen her yet. Okay. We also have a host of other folks that show up throughout this, including Linda Cardellini, Ava Russo, Ben Sakamoto, and Cade Woodward portraying Clint's family. And we have Jolt, the golden retriever, playing Lucky the pizza dog, who I think is one of the better additions to the MCU that we've gotten since 2008. today's episodes are both directed by Rhys Thomas.
But important note there, Robbie, we've got to add
tell us about this.
Is one of the first shows, I think, to have multiple directors. We've had multiple writers. But there is another tandem of directors coming for a few other episodes later, I guess, which we have not seen. But I noticed that the other day, which is unique. So we'll see how that goes. Having a different director on board for half of it. Strange.
Wow. No, that's true. I'm curious to see how, if that changes anything, because I do feel like that's been the way of maintaining a consistency in tone.
Right.
Even if the writing can feel a bit different. So that'll be fun to look out for.
And I wonder what's the process behind that? Sorry, this is not a tangent I'm going to stay on, but...
No,
is that because they wanted more creative direction inside the show? Is it because they needed to reshoot something? Is it because of Rhys Thomas, his schedule? Like, why would you split the director in half?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think it's funny because, like, The Mandalorian... they always did the like guest directors. Like that was like kind of their shtick
True.
Bryce Dallas Howard did one and like Taika Waititi did one, you know.
But on that note, they would always keep David Filoni and Jon Favreau as kind of like the overarching producers, I guess.
Right.
I think they're more involved maybe than another producer would be to keep the guest directors smooth. But even that, don't you think it suffered a little bit? That was a strange... I mean, at times I feel like it was so strange to go back and forth in tone. Anyways.
That's true. Because, I remember there was like a Dave Filoni directed episode, I believe. And then the next one was Bryce Dallas Howard's episode. And they totally feel like different worlds, which I only say here because, I do feel like that's something that the consistency in a director has helped protect against. I didn't think about it that way, but.
Gwen Stacy's episode, you meant, sorry, yeah.
Exactly, the best portrayal of Gwen Stacy.
Correct.
Her episode.
Okay, keep going, screenwriter, sorry.
So the first episode is written by Jonathan Eagla, the second is written by Elisa Clement, and Kyle, last but not least, the score for the show is composed by the one and only Christoph Beck.
Okay, first off, point number one, let's freaking go. Let's freaking go. Okay. I think I'm starting to fall in love with these shows and movies that just start with such a bang and such a tone shift that I'm already in. So then you have leeway to make a few missteps here or there, and it doesn't matter to me because I'm already in. There's 3 points I want to talk about here. And remember, by the way, we have only seen this one time 2 weeks ago. But we have to talk about 3 things right off the bat. One, the intro to this show. Are you kidding me? And I'll come back to that. Two, I was so captivated by Hailee Steinfeld and how she portrayed Kate Bishop immediately. And three, I love Christoph Beck and love having him back in the show. Let's talk about the intro. Are you kidding? I did not in any way expect, for some reason, I never guessed this, that that was how it was going to start. Even when you start with her family and you're getting the context of her as a little child, I guess maybe I had a clue when it said 2012, but I did not know that this is where we were going. So then to hear like my subwoofer start rumbling and I'm like, oh gosh, I have chills right now. They're in New York. Oh my gosh. And then to see an alternate shot of that Hawkeye scene taking down those ships, and to give the context of Kate getting to see that as a child and the giant worms flying through New York. Just, it was like Black Widow,
like
that
scary
way,
from that perspective.
Yeah. Again, Robbie, putting more context to a battle that a little bit gets left behind at times. And then they keep coming back with Spider-Man and now this and other references to it, where every time they do it, it makes more context and more weight. Think about it. If you're showing someone the MCU who's never seen it and they get to the Avengers, they'll be like, that was a really cool fight in New York. And you can be like, just wait. You'll feel it even more and more as we go along. You know what I mean?
Right.
And that's the fun of it.
No, that's like whenever you're watching it, it's more of a like, you're in awe of the fact that aliens are invading, but you're looking at it through the eyes of the Avengers, so it's not a scary thing. But then you see the same scene, and the way it's shot was really well done. Like the way that they, that the angle that they choose, seeing that thing like show up through the window.
Yes.
It's just like, and she looks up through the skylight, right, and sees it pass over.
Right. And just in general, I mean, it feels believable almost. I know it's a weird detail, but it's again this context of like, okay, giant worms coming through a portal in space is not very believable, but if it did happen, what would it feel like for a person living in New York in a flat?
Right.
Like, what do you like? Oh, this is what it would look like out their window. Are you kidding? Like, yeah.
And yeah, no, that's so true. And that goes back to that thing that Stan Lee was always sort of trying to get
outside your window, literally.
Yeah. Yeah, literally. I loved the tone and the pacing of that opening. And you're right. It was so, you told me the very beginning was all it took to get you super in. And so I was really interested to see what that meant. And yeah, absolutely agree.
And I just think that's going to be the number one takeaway, I think, for most of our audience. If you're listening to this, you've already watched the show. Obviously, by the way, spoiler alert for everything Hawkeye at this point. But I think if you were unsure on if you're going to care about it, this scene is going to bring you in if you're an MCU fan right off the bat. And that transitions me perfectly into my second point, which is just the emotional context, dude, for Kate Bishop. So not only is the scene terrifying and fun as an Easter egg for us MCU fans, you get a little bit of her background as a kid and losing her dad and why she comes from a family with money, et cetera. And then 12 minutes into the show, that's what I wrote down. It only took me 12 minutes to be absolutely in love with Hailee Steinfeld. I said this in the preview episode. I think this is going to be the other big takeaway for people. I just can't see somebody disliking how she's portraying Kate here. And I think a lot of people, given also that it's Hailee Steinfeld, are going to be like blown away by this portrayal, and she will become some people's favorite character. And I think this opening scene with her as a child and then messing around at the college, it only took me 12 minutes and I was like, okay, I'm into this character.
One thing that you've talked about in the past with Ms. Marvel that I don't think I expected as much from Kate Bishop, but I really love, is the perspective she has on the Avengers. Like, I thought that kind of based on what I know about Kate in the comics and based on what I was thinking her and Hawkeye's relationship was going to be, which we can talk about more when we talk about episode two, I was expecting her to be like, oh, like, I'm too cool for the Avengers. Like, y'all are lame. I'm like the new generation and we're going to do this thing different. You know what I mean? Like, and I'm sure a part of that will come, but I love how much she's like a mega fan.
Me too. Here's the difference for me. In my brain, I'm thinking that Miss Marvel is going to be a fan of Captain Marvel and the Avengers and whatnot, but I think that Captain Marvel is going to be flattered by that and treat her from the get-go with kindness and respect and take her under her wing, et cetera. That's my anticipation of that relationship.
Right.
I think what was so fresh here is, like, I didn't expect Kate to be a fan of the Avengers like she was, but Clint kind of treats her like trash anyways, or at least he's rude to her.
Right.
And she, I love watching this dynamic of her not letting that bring her down. You know what I'm saying? So, like, she takes Clint's rudeness and keeps getting right past it and eventually starts giving it back to him a little bit, but not in like a Tony Stark sarcasm. By the way, we have to start coming up with like different descriptions of sarcasm in the MCU, because I do feel like it's a little bit different each time.
Yeah, no, for sure.
We were just talking about The Amazing Spider-Man over on Friends from Work Plus, which you can check out, by the way, but how that version of Spider-Man is quippy, but in a slightly different way. And here I get Hailee Steinfeld's Kate Bishop, and because it's coming from the perspective of being a fan and all that, her giving it back to Clint still feels different here too. I don't know why. It still felt fresh to me.
Oh, no, absolutely. I think it's this like really interesting balance that I've always felt like Marcus and McFeely do the really good kind of sarcasm with heart thing.
Yes, it's confidence while still being a fan.
Right.
Like, she's confident in who she is, but it doesn't mean that she thinks that she's better than everyone else.
Right. No, I really, it sounds probably like we're splitting hairs, but I think it's important because I think it's a kind of nuanced position that she's holding within the MCU. And I'm with you. I wasn't expecting it, but now it makes me really excited to see what it looks like to move forward with that character.
Wow, I loved her. Right when the social media embargo released for this show, I had tweets ready about how much I enjoyed her performance. But I've said this so many times. What's unique for you and I is that those tweets are scheduled to go out, and I haven't heard a single other person's opinion. So that's a truly unbiased review, because I have no context from what people are thinking or a Rotten Tomatoes score or anything like that. And so you kind of go out there with the opinion. And I was so happy to see when I went out there with it that a ton of other people that had seen it early commented on the same thing.
Right.
So fun, refreshing to be back in New York, and Hailee Steinfeld is going to steal every scene. The third thing that I just need to bring up is I love having Christoph Beck here. He has a really good touch on how to do the sneaking around spy stuff with like his like that kind of stuff, and like his strings doing the that kind of feel. But then he somehow finds ways to have these epic culminations, like what happens in Ascendant. I felt that here again. Now, again, I don't have context on that. I remember loving it. I need to go back and listen. I can't wait to see it again, and I can't wait to have these scores released.
Oh, yeah.
But I just think he has a good grasp on what I'm looking for from a ton of these shows and movies. That's all.
Well, and the Christmas part of it kind of makes it all the more fun, too. Little, like, Carol of the Bells type stuff that we get.
And by the way, besides Iron Man 3, this is also fresh, right? A Christmas vibe?
Yeah.
Like,
well,
in New York
and more
at
so.
Like the giant Christmas tree and going to musicals and it's kind of snowing outside. I mean, am I crazy? I love Christmas. Is this just fun? It's fun to me. I'm excited about
it. It's very fun. No, it's very fun.
That's another way to make it so different, Rob. You know, like, we haven't had that yet. So even if you would say, hey, this feels like it's going to be another buddy cop thing, just like Falcon and Winter Soldier, how do we make it different? Let's change the tone and let's give it a little Christmas vibes.
Right. Right. And yeah, and just totally different, like a different take on the buddy cop relationship. Like, I really like where Sam and Bucky's relationship ends at the end of that. And I think that it sort of had to go through the process that it goes through on some level based on those characters' history. But it is, for the first couple episodes of that show, more or less the standard buddy cop thing. And this, I think you're right, is totally, it's just kind of its own. I'm not saying it's like entirely unique in the history of cinema and television, but I think within the MCU, it's sort of its own thing. And yeah, I also like that it's a Christmas thing that's coming out at Christmas. It's like when the Miles Morales game came out. It just gives you like a little extra, it feels right when because you're kind of in that mindset. Like Iron Man 3, it was so funny, like came out in the summer. It was like the summer blockbuster, you know, so you didn't get that.
Kevin Feige actually brought that specifically up in the Hawkeye press conference, is that Iron Man 3 is kind of a Christmas entry, but it came out in the summer. So this is even different in that way. You know, what's interesting, I think the main difference between the buddy cop thing, and we'll talk about this a little bit more in a second here, but the main difference for me is what we've been talking about. It's this fandom thing, because Bucky and Sam are both kind of alpha males that see each other that way, right? So it's very combative at first, and then they eventually kind of make amends and get like quippy that way. But we've never had something like this where Kate is a fan. She's confident, but she's a fan still. And Clint is kind of actually wanting to reject the alpha male, quote unquote, part of his Hawkeye-ness. Does that make sense? So they're both kind of not the same combative thing. Like, for example, like one of my favorite bits was when they finally go back to Kate's apartment and she's talking his ear off about the Avengers and how you're my biggest inspiration. I'm a huge fan. And Clint's like, I have so many questions for you. And she's like, but I have so many questions for you. First, she runs upstairs. Will you sign this with the bow? Like, that's the kind of thing. Yeah. It's a different shtick and I'm loving it. But Robbie, we also have to talk about this musical. Are you kidding me?
Oh, yes. Man, that was one of the things that really intrigued me about the trailers. And it did not disappoint for a couple reasons. One, the musical itself was just really cleverly done.
It's so clever. The lyrics were incredible.
Right. One, that's my first point. It's just really, it's like a WandaVision thing where when they're going to do something like that, they do it really well. In a way that's both funny and legitimately compelling, and that it's a just totally different art form within this world. Two, I really love that that's the way that we find out that Clint's now wearing a hearing aid. And that you're sort of like, wait, what is that about? And then you sort of slowly get the intro there, which, by the way, as we will be talking about soon in the comics corner, that is something that's pulled straight from this Matt Fraction run that has stuck around in the Hawkeye comics, and that Hawkeye is now deaf in the comics, and that's become kind of a big part of his character, and that happens during the Fraction AA run, which I don't think is too big of a spoiler. The third thing that I really loved about that scene is the emotional side that I did not expect, you know, from the trailers. Like, I thought that would be just kind of played for laughs, and it is. But then the way that Clint responds to seeing the Natasha character in that musical, I thought was actually pretty moving.
Absolutely agree with everything you just said. I love that when they go all out on something, they go all out. Like, I thought from the trailer we would get a clip of this for a second, like in a flash, like, hey, they're going to a musical, then they're going to the Christmas tree, whatever. But to actually have us sit in there and hear most of the song is incredible. Uh-huh. Love the introduction of the hearing aid and then the flashbacks of why do you have a hearing aid? That was cool to actually see again, Robbie. It's just, again, it's the practical ramifications of things that if this were real, okay, he might have hearing damage by this point from all the things that have blown up by his face. Also, if this were real, there probably would be a musical at this point about how they saved the world. And then lastly, let's talk in general a little bit about Clint from both episodes and how he's handling this Natasha stuff. I'm loving his entire vibe. Am I crazy?
Yeah.
I'm loving this idea that he's this hero that is kind of just not wanting to be famous, not wanting to be an inspiration, because he's also still really struggling with what the bad side of all that was, what he did with Ronan, which you got to talk about, and losing people he loved, like Natasha. And then I love mixing in the carryover from Ultron with that family dynamic while he's struggling with that. So what is his center while he's struggling with it? It's taking his kids to New York for Christmas. It's calling his wife, which again, with his wife, they had so many chances to play the typical trope where his wife's like, oh, come home. You don't need to fight. You've already done so much.
And instead, or he's like lying to her, like he's making up an excuse.
Right. That would have been option two. And instead they went with option three, which is more like the Spider-Man PS4 game, where it's like his wife is actually kind of his partner. Like in Ultron, remember? Right. We see her actually like speak into his life about his avenging and that she's proud of him. Right. I like this twist of like, oh, you're giving him that move? Oh, Nat was good at that one. Like, that's a classic. As if like she's been a part of this all along. So just Clint in general, dude, I think this is not what I was expecting again, and that's why I'm so excited.
Yeah, I totally agree. That was one of the things that excited me the most about this. Like I said in our preview, I had no idea how they were going to mesh the great things about the Fractionea run, Clint, with the great things about the MCU, Clint, and somehow they did it in a way that just feels really fresh, but really consistent to me. Like one of the things that you and I kind of harped on about Loki is that it was really fresh and really great, and that's why that show is excellent and, I mean, nearly perfect in a vacuum, but why it sort of bugs us a little bit because it doesn't seem totally, totally consistent with the version of the character that we had gotten before. And we talked a lot about that one episode, sort of comparing that to other characters that we've seen show up in Phase 4, and I think that this is an example of that done really, really well because you get that shot from the 2012 Avengers scene. You get the flashbacks you're talking about from all the movies. You get the stuff when he's watching the musical with Natasha. And so you get all the history baked in that feels really consistent. And the way he's talking with his family is exactly the same way we saw him interact with his family in Age of Ultron and Endgame. But you're also seeing Clint away from his family some in this show and away from the Avengers and S.H.I.E.L.D. Really, I think for the first time ever. And
true,
it just gives you a second to let the character breathe and see how he operates when he's on a sort of solo plane. And when he's not comic relief, he's not the kind of the weakest Avenger.
Yes. It's like shifting roles for him entirely.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I think to that point, the other thing that I really like about the way they explore this is the kind of the fact that he's not superpowered at all, and that he's a bit older than Natasha was, and you're starting to see that catch up with him. Like, that's another thing that was central to that Fraction run. If you remember, like, the very first page kind of opens with this monologue where he's like, I fight with men in armored suits and gods and people that have been bitten by radioactive spiders. And he's like, I do all the stuff that they do and I don't have any special healing powers. So you just see him like kind of fall out of a window. It's very reminiscent of that 2012 shot. And then the next shot you get in the comic is him in a hospital bed, you know, in like a full body cast because he's just a normal guy.
Yeah, which they're exploring like crazy here. We saw that in Ultron where he takes a hit and then they have to heal him, right? And with their regenerative tissue. But now here too, getting deaf or becoming hard of hearing, having him get hurt when he takes a hit, and just a general, you see him taking wear and tear, which is kind of unique for an Avenger.
Right.
Yeah.
It's one of those, I think it just makes me think like the genius of the MCU when it's done really well. And I think in some ways this kind of makes sense for the things that you and I have wound up really loving and the things that I think have stuck in our collective consciousness is when they take advantage of what makes a character unique and really explore that, like give that, like dig in and give that as much life as possible. Like that's what has made this whole story of the MCU come together in the way that it has. is it, like you look at the different relationships at play, like with that original Avengers team and how the different writers from Taika Waititi to Marcus Amafili figured out, okay, this is what makes this character different. So let's explore that. Like let's figure out how this character reacts to this particular stimuli and how that's mm-hmm. different than how this character would. And I think that not doing that is how you get the kind of like classic superhero movie thing that everyone says is super formulaic. And I think doing that is how you beat that.
Oh, yes. It's part of the beauty of where Endgame left us as well. I think in mm-hmm. hindsight, it was so genius to have Endgame have so many consequences and leave the Avengers basically not existing, like the facility's blown up, people have died, right. They've gone their own ways, because now it gives us freedom in all these Phase 4 movies to not have to always be like, why isn't Hawkeye calling Spider-Man? It's like right. He doesn't have a relationship with Spider-Man. He met him for 2 seconds. They didn't exchange phone numbers. The facility's torn up. They're not just all living there. By the way, the Easter egg with Kate saying that was one of the best lines of the entire thing so far, which was, can we go to Avengers Tower? And he says, Tony sold that. She goes, that is so disappointing on so many levels. I that's the kind of stuff I'm into. But to leave them in that facet gives us the ability to explore stories like Clint in a totally different light that's way more intimate and personal without right. you ever being like, why isn't he calling somebody else? You know, that's been Phase 4 kind of in general so far, which is a fun part yeah. about it.
Well, and as we're sort of transitioning or heading out of episode 1 into episode 2, you brought up the Ronin thing.
Yes,
briefly.
That's exactly what I was going to bring up. Yep.
And that, and this is going to be one of the, this is a hot take. This is more of a Kyle style hot take, but it's coming from Robbie. This might end up being, for me personally, depending on how it all plays out, the best quote unquote Rogue One work that I think we've gotten in the MCU.
Hmm.
Because that is one thing about Endgame that I don't dock at points, because again, it's a 3-hour movie and people already sort of groan about that length of a film, and so they just couldn't add anymore. But I do feel like we got very little Ronan and we got very little sense of what that meant for Clint. And now I'm thinking that maybe part of the reason why they were okay with doing that is because they knew that they wanted to explore that a bit in the show. Or hope that they would be able to, because it's giving that whole period of his a lot more significance. And you know how much I love that kind of thing.
Yeah. 100% agree. You take a, not weakness from Endgame, but you take a weaker part, a less explored part that they don't have time to explore, and give it its full due here. The idea of, okay, you don't know, people are going to come after you in that costume. Because right. I've done a lot of bad things there. And to then also sprinkle in more of what we saw in Endgame, which is Clint's guilt with what he's done.
Right.
So, yeah, I'm with you. Not only was that a fun part here, let's wait and see how that develops and where that goes. Because right. I think they have potential to even add more to it still. So,
like,
we'll see.
The fact that people know, I thought based on Endgame, that the people that knew about Ronan were just the event, like people like Avengers that are like tracking stuff like that all over the world. But hearing people on the news talk about Ronan as just this mysterious figure that was around during the blip is really cool to me. Like, it adds this whole new level of like, this was an actual identity that Clint inhabited for years. Like, this was a big part of his story that we're now going to have to see him wrestle with, because he was able to just kind of put it on a shelf to deal with the pressing issues in Endgame. But then that's all resolved, and on the one hand, he's kind of this hero, and I think that's one of the really interesting things that's being set up. Kate looks up to him as the version of him that she saw when she was a little kid in that 2012 shot, and sees him as kind of the ultimate hero. And he is probably wrestling in those exact moments, especially given that she is wearing the Ronin suit, with these very kind of non-heroic things that he did right. in that time during the blip. And that creates like such this kind of interesting tension.
And in general, I just can't wait for that dynamic to be explored tenfold.
Right.
In the second episode, one of my favorite scenes of the entire deal was them walking outside and her talking to him about his branding, which was really funny. So funny. And then, it kind of paints this picture of Clint is older. He doesn't even understand what like online branding would be, and nor does he care. Like, why would he care about that? That's not what he's there to do. But then, just like what Marvel always does, for Kate to hit him with that line, he's like, what am I selling? Inspiration, Clint. And I thought that was such a genius thing. What a fun thing to explore here. So like, remember we talked about every show has done this amazing job of having a fun, lighthearted exterior to be dealing with a really heavy, important interior question, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm excited if that's potentially what this could be exploring. What is it like to be an Avenger who feels like he's done some bad stuff and not realizing how many people he still can and should be inspiring? And to have that be viewed through the lens of Kate, who's so funny and so confident and such a badass, but is looking up to him, I'm eating it up. That's what I want more of. I'm going to get more of it. I love it.
Well, and you know, like we talked about this in the cast, you know, Florence Pugh, based on the Black Widow credit scene, you know, we always thought was going to show up in Hawkeye somehow, and that is supposed to be the case. I really love the potential there, and who knows how this will play out, of looking at that even through a little bit of a Natasha lens, right? Because that's something that Clint didn't have to go through in the same way. I mean, he dealt, although it's interesting, he dealt with that a little bit in Avengers, and we saw Natasha sort of relate to him on that level. And now this is, I think, even more so because he was under his own free will with what he did as Ronan. And Natasha, one of the things that I love so much about Black Widow is you see between that and between the conversations we get with her in Endgame that she has kind of gone through that work now and has had to kind of come to peace with the past and the things that she did that she's not proud of. And I think Clint was always sort of there for her in that. And now she's gone, and I think he's going to end up having to do some of that same work. It's just, there's so many kind of complex elements at play. And I think you're totally, totally right. That's all going on in this like fun Christmas buddy cop shoot 'em out series. Like, what a fun thing. What a great, great way to approach something like that.
I loved all the Black Widow shutouts in general. Didn't you? Just the little Easter eggs, like how many times she was referenced. And on that note, by the way, I just took a couple notes of some fun Easter eggs. Like, how fun was it to see that Thanos was right at the bathroom urinal? Right. Again, if it was real, if it was the world outside your window, that kind of stuff would be written in bathrooms.
Well, there is a big Thanos was right Reddit. Right. Which is the fun all the time.
Yeah, right.
It's also kind of a fun Easter egg in the comics. There was a big similar, pretty cataclysmic event, and Magneto dies, and for a long time you'll see graffiti in the comics that's like, Magneto is right. So it's kind of a fun callback.
Fun little Easter egg to the Matt Fraction comic with Lucky the dog. Not even an Easter egg, but just having the one-eyed dog thing. So fun. How about the Katniss Everdeen shout-out? In this MCU, they also have the Hunger Games, which I thought was another really funny thing.
That means that Katniss Everdeen is actually in the MCU.
She's canon. That's what that means. She's canon. She's canon. She could show up. Superman and Katniss Batman. Everdeen. Exactly. You beat me to it. How about another dinner scene here, Robbie? You called it.
Yes.
The dinner scenes, man.
I'm telling you.
Phase 4, dinner scenes.
I can't wait. I can't wait until we get the next volume of this History of the MCU book. To see the moment whenever Kevin decided to really focus on the family with these dinner scenes.
And then in 2021, Robbie Earle of Friends from Work predictably called that there are dinner scenes in all of Phase 4, which was intentional by us. That's what the book's going to say for you.
I do seriously love what those scenes have brought, though. Like in all of the things that we've talked about, those are some of my favorite scenes. Like, even in Eternals, it was one of my favorite scenes.
Yeah. Which, that brings up something we need to talk about. We haven't mentioned Kate's family dynamic yet. Do you have a hot take on that? It's obviously a very strange thing, and something's going on.
Yeah, so I don't want to get too into the comic stuff there, because I feel like that could be a little unnecessarily spoilery. And who knows? Who knows? But I think I think it would be better to see how it plays out here. But I am really intrigued to see what's going on with the degree of her mom's involvement with this organization that we're seeing kind of shape up. That's my biggest question mark, as I think it's maybe supposed to be.
And they're clearly engaged for no other reason, right? They're engaged because of something black market business stuff, right?
Yeah,
that's what I was thinking. And is Kate going to have to turn on her mother?
I mean, that's my sense. I'm also curious, like it's one of these things where on the one hand, it's clear that there's something shady going on. And I'm wondering if we get something sort of like WandaVision, where kind of early on we get some of the sword answers and then we are asking different questions than we started asking. And, you know, I wonder if, like at the end of episode two, we get the first look at Echo, Maya Lopez. And so it's going to be interesting to see how that plays. And, you know, it's got to be said, there's been a lot of conversation about Vincent D'Onofrio's Kingpin potentially appearing in the show. That has not been confirmed on any level.
But it totally feels like this is the vibe where they could do that. Totally.
And he tweeted about the Hawkeye series the other day. Like he retweeted like a trailer or something, and he said, "This show is going to be so fun. Love these Marvel shows." And it's like, everyone's like, come on, man. Yeah.
Can I just get this out there really early so this doesn't turn into WandaVision?
Yes.
Can we all as an audience agree to just watch this and love it for what it is, which is that it's been so much fun so far. I love Hailee Steinfeld. I love this dynamic. I love exploring Clint's background. But can we try to keep all of the making it what it's not to a minimum, right? Like if Kingpin does show up, if Daredevil shows up, if Yelena shows up, all of that would be really fun, and I'll take it when it happens, and it's gonna be so much fun. But can we not spend every week speculating on that, like getting our hopes up that he's gonna be in there and then disappointing when he's not? Please.
Yeah. No, I that's a good word. I love that also, because I think one difference between this and WandaVision is, and that's something we'll have to talk about as we go through the show, but I get a little bit of a sense that this is Jeremy Renner's version of the Black Widow movie. And that I think it's kind of, it feels a little bit like it could be a swan song. It feels like this could be like the chance to explore that character that's often been peripheral to the main films. So I'm really happy to minimize distractions and focus, especially with how much Kate Bishop is already a really great character. Like we've got two characters that I am happy to just camp out with for six episodes. Like I don't need a ton of extra stuff thrown in. I don't think that we need any bells and whistles here. So my last thing on that note, I wanted to talk about the tracksuit mafia, because that's again pulled straight from the Hawkeye comics, and you're going to see more and more the bro talk going through Hawkeye Twitter, because everybody is referencing that Matt Fraction comic in the same exact way. But that's been fun just to see that. I'm curious to see more of it, and then I can't quite tell how we're supposed to feel about the tracksuit mafia. Like in the comics, it starts out and it's clearly played for laughs. And the whole idea, at least for the longest time, is that Hawkeye is just kind of like running circles around these guys because they're sort of idiots. And they're painted as a bit more of a legitimate threat here, I think. Wouldn't you say?
Wow, that is fascinating, because I was not thinking about the comic reference. I thought kind of the exact opposite, that I wrote down in my notes that one of the things I didn't like was that they're so jokey. I didn't feel a ton of, just the opposite. Like I didn't feel a ton
That's
of
funny.
Pressure from them because they were so jokey. But I get what you're saying. If you're coming from the context of they're so stupid in the comics, they're, you know, maybe they're a little bit of a threat here, but that's a funny difference between you and I.
Yeah.
I thought the lines got like too comical, where I'm like, bro.
Oh, it definitely.
But that's the whole point of it, I guess. Wow. Interesting. I got to think on that a little more then.
Well, and that's one of the things where I'm really excited to rewatch this, because I remember, I mean, so there's the one kind of leader that is highlighted that I'm assuming we're going to get some kind of backstory on that feels like the Carly from Falcon Winter Soldier sort of figure within the tracksuit mafia. But the other question to me, and the reason why I say it feels a little bit more sinister, is they have to be connected somewhat to that auction. Like, I don't think it was totally coincidental.
Right, right.
That they just
barged in there. Well, that part was sinister. Like, they murdered people there.
Right, right. Like, I feel like there's something going on with them and with her soon-to-be stepdad, who is clearly a villain of some sort. That's
And by the way, Robbie, even there, I wonder if they're making that so obvious, if they'll twist that and pull the rug out from under us. Not that he's a good guy, but maybe he's like a... What if he was actually working for the cops and he's undercover? Or what if he's a third-party bad guy? Like, he's also trying to stop them, but for something else. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Or maybe he's just straight a bad guy.
Or he's a Skrull.
Or he's a Skrull. Okay, that's going to be phase four. Everyone that you don't know about is a Skrull, potentially.
Yep.
If they were to go back in like a year and like all of a sudden be like, by the way, every one of these people were Skrulls and you have no idea, I'd be like, okay, come on, please.
What if Wanda was a Skrull?
Okay. Robbie, that's blasphemous. You don't say that on this podcast.
I think you would quit the podcast.
Yeah, it'd be over. Friends from work is done. I was so into this from the first 12 minutes. While I was watching that intro scene, I thought, this could be up there with WandaVision for me in my rankings. I know it's way too early, but that's what I was thinking. Right. That's where the bar went from. Like, I was moderately excited, and instantly I was like, oh gosh, this could be like a, you know, contender for best show. As the two episodes progressed, I did have a couple of tiny things that probably lowered that slightly for me. Not very far at all. As you can tell, I'm very excited and just talked for an hour about how pumped I am. But I'd be remiss if I didn't bring up a couple things here, Rob. Like,
sure.
I'm not sure that his kids are fully settled into their role yet. I love the dynamic that they're creating. And I thought his youngest son was the best one.
Uh-huh.
His middle daughter had a couple parts where she's like, Dad, should we be worried? That I was like, okay, it doesn't feel... And by the way, I don't want to be the podcast that just crushes child actors. I feel like that's...
But, you know, like, listen...
Our manager Pete's listening to this right now, and he's like, "Oh, he's rolling over in his grave." He's called us out on that before.
Did we kill?
But actually, then to kind of spin off that, then I'll say I thought the least settled in actor was his oldest son, who's not even really a child actor.
Yeah, it was kind of rough. It's interesting to see how Marvel balances the. What we all want in terms of consistency of keeping certain actors with, you know, needing actual talented actors. I don't mean to say he's not at all putting him in a body bag. I don't mean to say that he's not. I just mean that that is a concern, right? Like, if you cast someone, you know, 10 years ago and they worked really well for that particular role, and then now 10 years from then you've got someone that needs to kind of have a bigger role, it's like, yeah, that's sort of tricky, because we all love the continuity of being able to keep that same face in there. But, you know, I don't know. It's a tricky thing to balance, because I totally agree. I felt that. I felt something I always say to you is, I think really good performances can fix mediocre writing. And I really believe that, because I think if you nail the delivery, obviously it doesn't make the writing excellent, but I think it can still make the show or the movie excellent.
It's like a band-aid.
Because if there's a certain kind of knowing delivery, and I think a great example of that here is Haley Steinfeld. Like, there are a lot of really, really great lines. I'm not saying the writing in the show is not good, but there are a couple that I think delivered in another way, or maybe by a less talented actor, would not hit. But I think she adds such personality that she makes it really, really work. And I think that's why you're right, in that she's going to be, I think, a really big contribution to this world because of her ability to do that. But I think the kids stuff, when you take, one, the fact that you know, they're just they're child actors, which is I like we always have to cut them some slack. And join our Slack. And two, I think, you know, the writing in those scenes feels a little bit cheesy to me anyway, some of the family stuff.
But I really like the dynamic they're trying to set up with it, though. That's the weird thing.
Like, yeah.
I love what they're personally trying to set up. Maybe that's because I have kids. I don't know. But
well, I love the stuff with – well, maybe that's true because I love the stuff with Clint and Laura. And maybe that's just because I'm married and I like that. but I don't know. I do – I like the idea of the kids dynamic. I still really love that plot move in Age of Ultron. I just – it's crazy how much – like we talked about, I think you and I are a little bit different in that you, I think, slightly preferred episode one here. And I actually slightly preferred episode two, largely because there's less Clint family stuff and more Clint and Kate, which is something that I feel like exponentially better about in the way it's playing out on screen.
I liked both of them. I thought the family dynamic worked specifically well, though, at the musical. And just outside the musical. And then I thought it worked well at their dinner when the waiter comes up to comp Barton something. I started losing the family dynamic a little bit when they were saying goodbye at the hotel. That's the couple lines I'm talking about. But I, in general, right. I like the dynamic they're going for. I just thought a couple of the lines or the performances weren't perfect there. It's minor. It's really minor because they actually sent him home.
Right.
But I do like that vibe.
They knew. They're like, get out of here.
Stop it. Okay, I brought this up as a critique, but it seems like you were more critical of it than I was. I still liked it, just a couple little things. You're body bagging people over there.
Hey, look, you're always telling me that I'm always defending stuff. So here I am. I'm out for blood.
Really minor things. Like I said, I thought the Tracksuit Mafia was a little bit too jokey. Although it did give us a funny moment when Kate barges in through the roof. I thought that was one of my favorite parts. And I like the idea that Clint has so much confidence against these guys that he knowingly tells his wife, I'm going to get captured. And he even like rolls his eyes when Kate shows up. All that stuff worked. But I thought in general, they were maybe a little bit too jokey, which we talked about. And then the last thing, and this is really minor, for a second there in that second episode with the LARPing stuff, I was just wondering, is this getting a little too, like we said in Loki, like side story, side mission-y if it's a video game, where it's like the whole point of the episode was Clint needed to get the suit and they're just going to delay how long it takes him to get it. Like it's not back at the apartment and then it's actually at this guy. And instead of the guy just giving it to him, even though he's an Avenger, he makes him have to pretend fight and that gets dragged out. And so a little bit, I was like, are we getting distracted? Like the point was, I want the suit. I don't need to know it takes 5 episodes to get it. I had that feeling for a millisecond.
Yeah.
And here's why I'm okay with it is because I think all of these scenes are doing something well and they're doing multiple things at the same time, which is something you've brought up as a praise for a movie, is that I want the scene to be doing more than one thing. And so the LARPing scene was funny, but I do think it was still doing another thing as well, which is painting this picture that the city still views Clint as an inspiration, even if he isn't, or even if he doesn't want to be. And so I give it grace because it's doing multiple things.
And yeah, I totally agree. And I just like the personality there that we see. Like it's sort of reminiscent of the way that Clint interacted with Pietro in Age of Ultron. It's this sort of like begrudging, like sort of annoyed, but like ultimately kind of good-hearted guy that's willing to go along with it. And I just think it was kind of, again, I'm so
it
starved.
Did give us some really great character development, though, through it. So you're right.
Right. Yeah, I think I'm just so starved for those moments with Clint that I'm really, really happy to get them. And I think that's maybe the larger point. Like, I think the Ronan thing particularly, but I just think in general, like, I am viewing this a lot like Black Widow, even though it's taking place after Endgame. Because I'm like, oh man, I just love getting more context about this person outside of his Avengers world.
Yep.
Speaking of Avengers world, my last note, I think you and I had pretty much the same cons, which I would say my negatives were, like I said, the writing was just not, it wasn't quite on par, in my opinion, with like the opening of Loki and the opening of WandaVision, which I thought were excellent. But I do think it's really good. It's good writing. But I just think that I had to call that out because those others we sort of enshrined as kind of perfect openings. And then, yeah, some of the child performances. But otherwise, like, I had such a great time. The reason I transitioned there, talking about the Avengers world, is I did want to say one other really fun thing was the mention of them recovering the suit from the Avengers complex wreckage.
Another Easter egg. Let's go.
Well, we talked in the preview, right, about is this going to be the show that deals with the real fallout of Endgame in terms of like what you were just referencing a few minutes ago, the real dissolution of that team or disassembling of that team. And yeah, I love that. Like why were they able to get in and grab stuff like that from the wreckage? What was the process of the cleanup there? Who all was involved in that? Like just more, like there's so much to mine here. And again, that's what I love about the MCU is that they're willing to kind of patiently do that.
Absolutely. I loved it in general. I feel like the bar has been raised now. My expectations have been raised and I'm all in. This has been really fun because, like we said, we saw this 2 weeks ago. We haven't seen it again. So this was a little bit more of a review and our initial reactions. But I'm really excited to get into this weekly again with where this is going. We didn't talk a ton about seeing that villain at the end, kind of, and what's going on with Kate's family. Like, I'm excited to get into the nitty-gritty of the plot each week now again. You know, we're back. We're back into a weekly thing.
We're back.
And it's going to be really fun. And like I said, I was blown away by this, honestly.
Right.
I think it's just, in the end, like I said from my spoiler-free episode, that it's just so refreshing to be back on such a small scale. That balance between Eternals and this and the juxtaposition of those two is really fun because
right.
whenever Marvel gives us a bunch of cosmic stuff, they follow it up with a bunch of grounded stuff, and you just remember that all this stuff can exist, and it's so fun to see them both. And just the Christmas thing, small scale, New York, literally walking the streets of New York was just so refreshing for me. I can't wait to talk about this more. Holy cow. Guys, thank you for listening. Don't forget to check out our t-shirts. We can't wait to send them to you. Happy Thanksgiving. We're grateful for you guys. I think last year when we hit Thanksgiving, we did an episode where we're thankful for things in the MCU. We could do that again. But the thing we're most thankful for is all of you guys listening and supporting. We love it so much. Don't forget to check out our website, theffwpodcast.com. Listen, follow, and subscribe to our podcast wherever you get your podcasts, Apple, Spotify, etc. And don't forget the Cinemark stuff going on. Don't forget to follow us on social media at the FFW Podcast. On our website, you can join our Slack channel. That's become a fun community, as we've talked about a lot. And guys, just enjoy Thanksgiving. Be grateful in this season. Have a good time with your family. Be safe traveling. And we will see you next time on Friends from Work.
Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
6 months from now, you could be running a 5K, booking that dream trip, or seeing thicker, fuller hair every time you look in the mirror. Through Hers, you can get dermatologist-trusted, clinically proven prescriptions with ingredients that go beyond what over-the-counter products offer. Whether you prefer oral or topical treatments, Hers has you covered. Getting started is simple. Just fill out an intake form online, and a licensed provider will recommend a customized plan just for you. The best part? Everything is 100% online. If prescribed, your treatment ships right to your door. No pharmacy trips, no waiting rooms, and no insurance headaches. Plus, treatments start at just $35 a month. Start your initial free online visit today at forhers.com/talk. That's forhers.com/talk. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.